Well, it's really very, very much of a challenge to choose a part of the work which does justice to it all. It doesn't, of course, because there are stories on kings, there are stories on heroes, there are stories on demons, there are stories on, yeah, well, the world as it is.
Leiden University is building a new Middle Eastern library. In this podcast series, we will discuss some of the finest objects. Our guest today, Gabrielle van den Berg, Professor of Cultural History of Iran and Central Asia. So, welcome, Gabrielle.
Thank you.
And today we will have a very special episode, I suppose, about the Book of Kings. Is that correct?
That is correct, but apart from the Book of Kings, I also would like to go into two other manuscripts that have, well, a relation to the Book of Kings, we could say. So the first one, which I have here, it is a very small book, and it's entitled The Story of Shabrang. Now, Shabrang means the one who is night-colored, and it's a spin-off of this great Book of Kings, and actually a very special spin-off, because it's really rare.
All right, we have spin-offs. This starts to sound like a Netflix series.
It could be a Netflix series indeed, because the main figure of this spin-off is a demon. And he is actually the son of a demon that plays a role in the Book of Kings, the White Demon. He's very famous because he was defeated by the great hero of the Shahnameh. And that seems, well, in the Shahnameh or in the Book of Kings, seems to be the end of that episode, but then later on in history people thought that's not enough, so let's compose a new story about a son he has fathered, and let's build up a new story on that topic.
All right, we already have some hints of where we're going, so thank you so much. And maybe it's good to know that we're talking about Persian literature today. Well, maybe first of all, you could give us some context as to where in time and where in place we are.
Yes, of course. Indeed, Book of Kings, or Shahnameh, which literally means Book of Kings, has been composed by a poet called Ferdowsi, which means the paradisical one. And it has been composed at the end of the 10th century, so it's more than 1,000 years ago. He completed it, at least so we believe, in the year 1010 CE. And this book is a work, it's in verse. It has about 50,000 verses, so it's a very long narrative. And it's written in Persian, which was at the time a language which had, let's say, emerged from the Islamic conquest, a new language, which was an Islamic language, but also very much a language that came out of the ancient Persian empires. So a very interesting language, a very rich language, which is written in Arabic script, but with a few extra letters.
And we will be discussing three separate books today. And one of the three we have here in the room, but the other two are too rare and too delicate to take out of the special collections of the Leiden University libraries. Let's start with the one that we have in the room today. Could you pick it up, please?
I'm picking it up, and it's again a great treat to be to have it in my hands, because I worked for a very long time on this actually really small book. As you can see, it's a rather small book with a leather binding, with the let's say traditional Islamic binding, as it is always described as such. So it encloses the book in a very nice manner. And this book, on the, let's say, on the back side of the book, it is written the Hekayat Shabrang in Latin. So it's a description in Latin. And we know that this booklet, booklet is perhaps a bit of an exaggeration, but this rather small book was brought to the library in the context of a very famous scholar named Golius, who made sure that many books from the Middle East became part, actually, of the collection of our Middle Eastern library, of the Oriental collections, as they were called. And in this book, there's also a name written, and that name is Wilmet. And Wilmet's 1760, so he was the former owner of the book. But the book itself is older. And in this book, we read the story of the demon Shabrank, and how he, with armies of demons, is fighting against the great hero Rostam and his family. And Rostam is the name of one of the main heroes of this Book of Kings. The book itself has, unlike the other two manuscripts I'd like to discuss and that are a little bit more fragile, this book has no illustrations, so it's just text, and the text itself is written in two columns, in black.
And we're talking about one of the spin-offs, you said, of the Book of Kings, right?
Indeed, yes.
And in what language is it written?
This is also written in Persian. Okay. So most of these spin-offs, because this is by no means the only spin-off we have, most of these spin-offs are written in Persian too, like the Book of Kings. And they are, indeed, they sort of suggest that the audiences over the centuries couldn't get enough of some of the storylines in this Book of Kings and wanted a sequel. So we find many sequels, sometimes enclosed, as it were, embedded interpolated, as we say when we talk about manuscripts, in a Book of Kings manuscript itself, which is really fascinating. I worked for quite a while for a project which was making an inventory of illustrated Shahnameh manuscripts, and job, so to speak, I had to go to different libraries and to look carefully and closely at all these Shahnameh manuscripts, and it was really sometimes a surprise because you would encounter a new story, you know, embedded in a manuscript. It was just made part of that manuscript, which was fascinating. So, but this one is a spin-off, which is sort of an individual, let's say, copy, and that's also very nice to see. So we do have both, actually.
And later on, we will also talk a bit about the main story, so to say.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Because it would be a shame to only talk about the spin-off of the real
true.
Thing.
True. It's part of its history, but there's a lot more to it than just the spin-offs. That's true. But it says something. I think it's important also, the fact that that spin-offs exist, say a lot about the impact and the influence and the legacy of this great work.
Yeah, well, that would be a good thing to discuss at this moment then, because you are a professor of cultural history of Iran and Central Asia.
Yes.
Is this spin-off that we just talked about, is it a nice-to-know story, or is there something more to it? So that does it tell us something about maybe society of that age?
It does tell us something about society of that age, but in this specific spin-off is most of all an entertaining story, which basically you could imagine that people simply like to learn more about, demons. They are fascinating and they are bad. And it's just really for fun, I would say. Though there also exist spin-offs and works related to this Book of Kings that have a much more societal and also historiographical impact, I would say. And those are, the spin-offs that, for example, have been written about rulers, contemporary rulers, not of today, I mean, but rulers of the, let's say, past, who kind of commissioned a Book of Kings for themselves, where they themselves played the main role. So that was indeed something which is in on many levels very informative for us. For example, the ruler Timur, who was a great ruler in Iran and Central Asia, present day Afghanistan, Middle East, in the 14th and 15th century, he was someone who indeed had his own so-called Timurname, so the Book of Timur, which is basically a kind of, maybe not a spin-off, but a kind of in imitation of the Shahnameh, the Book of Kings. So he himself wanted to have his own Book of Kings, as it were.
A little in the fashion of people nowadays who write or let other people write their autobiographies, maybe.
Yes, exactly. Yes, 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 true. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
so
that's definitely what's happening in a way. And it's of course a very much an heroic biography, because the Shahnameh, the Book of Kings, is very much a book of heroism, and that was also the way some rulers wanted to be portrayed, actually, and they wanted to become connected to this important ideological work, because the Book of Kings was not just a book of stories, but also very much a book of ideology, in the sense that from that book you could, as it were, compose a kingship ideology, how to behave as a king, and also how to behave as a person and as a good Muslim ruler.
Okay. I think this is the time to talk a bit more about the real deal then. This Book of Kings, who are the kings that we are talking about?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question, because actually it's not one king, it's dozens of kings. And it starts the book is built up in such a way that we start with creation, actually. So we start not in the time of Adam, very familiar figure, of course, also in the Quranic tradition, but we start with the more Iranian creation myth. And that creation myth, there's a name to that, and that is the name Gayumars, and he's the first man on earth. And in his time, a bit comparable to paradise of Bible and Quran, we see that everything is in harmony, the world is in peace, man and animals are living together, and that's actually also what we see depicted in illustrated copies of this Book of Kings. And that's the time of, let's say an ideal time. But of course, something happens and then everything falls apart. And then we have a couple of kings we call, let's say, primordial kings. And these are kings of the world who sort of seem to deal with the problems, but also invent important things for humanity, such as fire. But also Persian New Year, very interestingly, a very important aspect of culture. And after a period in time, we see that... I can't sort of in this framework present the entire storyline of the Shahnameh, but we move at some point in time to a kind of more less global perspective of the kings, but a more, let's say, regional, territorial perspective. And in that part of the Book of Kings, we have actually two main geographical areas, and these are Iran on the one hand, and Turan on the other hand. So, and it's very interesting because Iran and Turan are presented as opposites, but and opposites in the sense also that a great war takes place between Iran and Turan, and this great war is a part of the Shahnameh, a part of the Book of Kings, large part of it. But it's also very much a war between brothers. So it basically came into being, the reason that the war happened, as it were, was that one of the kings had to divide the world in three parts. And the best part of the world was Iran, and that was given to the youngest brother. The older brothers were not happy about that, and they killed him. And that is the start of a very great war. And that goes on and on and on.
And what would you say is the moral to this story?
Well, there's not one moral, I would say. Of course, the moral is you should not kill and you shouldn't be jealous, and greed is very bad. There's actually a demon also in the Shahnameh, at least is personified as such, who is indeed called Oz, which means something like greed, so that you should fight that. But there are many hidden sort of messages in the Shahnameh, and it's, of course, the storyline itself is meant for entertainment and for fun, but it certainly has this undertone and this very clear message, how should you behave as a human being, and what should you do, and what is good and what is bad. And the interesting thing is that the main figures of this work are not necessarily always very clearly good or bad, but they have different sides. So, and sometimes, they have an episode where someone is really good, but at that the same time, that same figure can also have very strange ideas, for example, something like the clear example of hubris. Someone wants something so badly, it's a good king, but he wants to fly, so he makes sure that he can fly. Of course, that will go wrong, but that's the kind of thing that indeed happens in the Book of Kings, in the Shahnameh. So it's multidimensional, I would say.
And can we consider it to be a religious book or not so much?
Well, there's a lot of discussion on this, of course, because it was written or it was composed in a time when Islam had made its entrance in the Persian world already for quite some time, because we're speaking the 7th century, and then slowly Islam was adopted by most of the inhabitants of the area. So it is, on the one hand, the morals are certainly not to be separated, I think, from general Islamic morality. But it's also a chicken and egg question, like how it works on morals in an Islamic context. How did they come into being? So, and they were certainly also informed by, let's say, previous civilizations, if I may use that word, such as the Persian empires. So it is very much also a question of interaction. But there is, the poet, so the writer, or if you wish, of the Shahnameh, of the Book of Kings, was a Muslim. We know he was a Muslim. But the book itself, apart from, let's say, generally speaking, fitting in an Islamic context, is not as such very clearly Islamic, because it describes a period which ends, basically starts with the beginning of time, and it ends when indeed the Arabs and the Muslim conquest, as it were, happen. So in the year 652, it really ends, and that's it. So there is this kind of awareness, you could say, but it's not very much religious. Of course, there is also in that same work the introduction of a great prophet of one of the main religions of this area before the coming of Islam, and that's the prophet Zarathustra. So he does play a role in the Shahnameh, in the Book of Kings, but not very emphatically. It's an episode, and it's kind of understood that this plays a role, but yeah. And I say this, of course, but there's others who no doubt would present it in a different way. So I'm not saying that my version of this interpretation, or that my interpretation, is necessarily, you know, the only possible one.
You are a scientist, of course. What is there to study about this ancient manuscript?
Well, the thing is that there is not one manuscript. We at Leiden University, we take pride in the fact that we have a manuscript of this work, and actually one that is from the 15th century, so quite old, and also meaningful, because it's, the text of that particular manuscript was used in the, let's say, the authoritative edition we have today of the Shahnameh, which was made by Khalid Mutlaq. So it is a manuscript which is very, valuable in that respect. But if you look at the collections in the world, there are thousands of manuscripts of the Shahnameh, and that is because the work was really important to many different people, amongst others, definitely also rulers.
And there's also maybe interesting things, or fun even, to compare the different versions to one another.
Definitely, because there is indeed, you can always, I think, recognize the Book of Kings. And that, it's 50,000 verses. It's written and completed in the year 1010. But the first manuscript we have in the world, which is now in Florence, dates from 1217. So it's much later than 200 years after its composition. So we also, a lot may have happened to the text. So the text tradition and how it was transmitted is something which is indeed really interesting. And there's also many variants and indeed many extras. So if you look at over the centuries, if you really sort of take a step back and look at the manuscripts from the 14th century and then compare it to manuscripts of the 19th century, you see that, well, the tendency is that these manuscripts grow, they become bigger, because more stories are added to the main body of stories. And that's one of the fascinating things, I believe, that it's really a living epic. That's a growing living epic, which really was something that you should see as something organic almost. Yeah. So, because today, of course, we are talking about manuscripts now, but the Book of Kings and Shahnameh also figures in many different other ways, like in oral traditions, but also today in games, for example. So it's really like quite alive, one may say.
We've said at the beginning of this conversation that you also brought a third object, you didn't bring it with you, but on the computer, because also this one is also very delicate. So could you tell us a little bit more about this third object that you decided to talk about?
Yeah, the third object is actually a different work, but it is also in Persian. It's written by a poet we know as Maktabi Shirazi. It's a Persian rendition of the story of Layli and Majnun, or Layla and Majnun, as it is sometimes called. And that's a famous romantic couple. Actually, that's also a very tragic story, because it's a romantic couple on the one hand, but on the other hand, they never, unite really. It's a tragic story in that respect. So it's one of the, you have a couple of these couples, if you can say that, in Middle Eastern narrative traditions, and Layli and Majnun is very famous. Majnun means madman. That's became his name later on, because he has a real name, and that's Gijs, or Gijs. And he was in love with Leli, but they could not marry. And that is basically the topic of a story that has been rewritten, recomposed by many different authors. But why I brought, or why I would like to sort of discuss this manuscript, is because it's quite a late manuscript in terms of... we were talking about the manuscript from the 15th century just now, but this manuscript is dates from the 19th century. That's almost at the end of this tradition, because making manuscripts is something that ended when book printing became more current. Now, in the Middle East, this happens later than in, for example, in the European tradition. That's also because manuscripts were very highly, had a high standard. It was something that really was important. And also the art of calligraphy was really important. It's not as if this, the skill of book printing was known, but it never really made an impact up until the end of the 19th century. So we have a very long tradition of manuscript production. And this manuscript, which we have here at Leiden University Library, is interesting because indeed it's quite late, so it's 19th century. It has very nice illustrations, and it also has a beautiful binding. It has a so-called lacquer binding, so it's different, very different from the other two manuscripts I was discussing, which have a leather binding. And this lacquer binding is like a work of art in itself. And so you see, it's a flower. It has flowers, and it's very shiny. That's quite typical. So that's one of the reasons why I would like to show it.
It suits with the calligraphy tradition, I suppose.
Yeah, it's indeed, it was an innovation at some point in time, and more and more manuscripts were produced with such a lacquer binding, and they are also objects of desire, so to speak, because they're very nice to look at. So it's not only the binding, but also, of course, also the inside, but the binding itself is also like a piece of art.
And well, now that we have an expert in the house, maybe we could give our listeners a little treat and read a passage from this manuscript.
I can read a passage from the Shahnameh, I suppose. Yes, sure. Yeah, well, it's really very, very much of a challenge to choose a part of the work which does justice to it all. It doesn't, of course. You would have to read many different parts of it, because there are stories on kings, there are stories on heroes, there are stories on demons, there are stories on, the world as it is. But one of the most famous episodes of the Book of Kings, of the Shahnameh, is the episode of Rostam and his son Sohrab. So Rostam, I already mentioned him, he is the great hero of the Shahnameh, but he also has a son. But the problem in the Book of Kings is that he did not know he had a son. And the son is a member of, the enemy, or member of the enemy army, or fighter, or a big warrior in that army. And at some point in time, they face each other. And it's a very sad story, because inadvertently Rostam kills his own son. And that's one of the big tragedies in the Shahnameh. And that's also one of the most famous stories still today. If you ask anyone who is a speaker of Persian, he or she will know that story. So it's a tragic story because, of course, when he is mortally wounded, it becomes clear to the father, Rostam, that he just killed wounded his own son to such an extent that, that he couldn't be saved. So, and that is very beautifully described by Ferdowsi. And you could, of course, also read this episode as a kind of independent story. And that's also what has happened. But, and then after that, this terrible event, Ferdowsi, as it were, gives a kind of reflection. And he reflects with these words, and I just read the Persian, and then I'll give you the English translation. That's Jahana shigefta ki kardar tost, hamasto shikaste, hamasto dorost, azindo yekira najumbid mehr, kherat dur bod, mehr nanmud cher. Ami bachera bazdanat sotur, che mahi bedarya, che dardasht gur, nadanat hami mardom az ranj az. Yeki Toshmani ro ze farzand baz. O world, how full of wonders are your doings. Sometimes you break, sometimes you heal. None of these two felt any love move inside them. Wisdom was far, love did not show its face. The animal will recognize its young, the fish in the sea, and the onager in the steppe. Mankind, burdened by desire, does not see its child in an enemy. So that's very beautiful kind of reflection on what just had happened. And that's what Ferdowsi is very good at, that kind of thing. So he does this in many different instances. So it's the story, but it's also very much indeed reflecting on stories and giving a kind of universal wisdom here, I would say. So basically he says that more often, that animals are in many respects wiser than men, who are always blinded by indeed greed, by desire, by conquest, by war. And that's what he basically seems to protest against, which is a very good advice, I would say, for any ruler.
That's something politicians nowadays can still learn a bit from.
I'm afraid it's the past 1,000 years, not much change, but that's just what it is.
Thank you so much for sharing this ancient wisdom with us today. And thank you so much for your perfect explanation.
You're welcome. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do this.